The episode that you are about to hear was recorded prior to the events that transpired around Silicon Valley Bank. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome back to Fireside, a podcast from FS Investments. My name is Kara O'Halloran. I'm a director on our investment research team here. And today is our second annual Market Madness episode. So I am joined by my whole team to go through what we think is going to impact markets the most over the next few months. So I've designed a bracket with 16 teams, and we'll go through head-to-head matchups and fill out the bracket in real time to determine what we think is going to move markets the most over the next few months. So I'm excited to be joined by Lara Rehm, our chief U.S. economist, Rob Hoffman, the head of our research team, and Andrew Kors. Thank you all for coming in today.
It's going to be great. Yeah. I mean, I won last year, so
this is true.
I'm feeling
big
really confident.
I'm excited to be doing this because if you know where my college basketball loyalties lie, you know that I'm not overly excited for March Madness this year. So at least we have Market Madness.
Yeah, and I think I speak for everyone when I say I hope markets have a better year than our Wildcats did. Yeah.
I agree with that. All right, so let's dive right in. So we're going to start with our first matchup in the East region. We have an up or downside surprise in inflation versus corporate credit defaults. So, Rob, I'm going to have you walk us through this matchup. What are you watching here?
Well, maybe I'll start with corporate credit defaults because you know my background. I'm a credit guy, so I can go there first. I think a lot of what's been going on in the corporate credit space, you do see rising default rates without a doubt. Both bonds and loans are a little bit over 2% now, which is the highest they've been in a while. However, average annual rates are still 3.5% or less. And the outlook for this year is while they will continue to slowly climb, most market prognosticators don't really expect you to get anywhere near even long-term averages. And certainly one of the things that we've written about a lot in our work is the fairly healthy underlying fundamentals within credit. So while you have slower economic growth, it is causing some increase in defaults on the corporate credit side. I have a harder time seeing that being a major issue, especially when you're going up against up or downside inflation surprises. The impact from that really resonates across the rates markets and Fed expectations. It causes all sorts of impacts in equity markets. We've seen fixed income in the ag put up, you know, returns that we wouldn't have thought possible, both to the downside.
Yeah, that's a tough matchup.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think also if we think about corporate defaults, I look at maturity schedules in the market, which look really favorable as of now. So only 16% of the market matures in the next 2 years. I mean, that's 84% of the high yield and loan market that does not have a near-term maturity. I mean, I do think we have to watch. We've started to see a little bit of margin erosion. So we do have to watch these fundamentals. But I do think it's, as we've seen them kind of slow a little bit, it's more of a mean reversion back to, you know, off of these exceptionally strong levels back towards the averages. So I agree with you, Rob. I don't think corporate credit defaults are going to move markets more than inflation. I actually was looking at some of this data. If you look at CPI, the S&P 500 returns on CPI days last year, we averaged a move of 2.6% in either direction on CPI day.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think inflation, it drove markets. I'd say it was the primary driver last year. I don't think it won our tournament, but I think we all know in hindsight it was the primary driver. And I think it beats credit defaults in this one.
Something tells me if you looked at the average change in the S&P on days that the corporate credit default rate got updated every month, that it would not have near the same
right.
level of volatility.
I think that's right. I probably should have looked at that. But I think there's no statistical significance there. All right. Well, round one, I think we all agree. Inflation's moving on.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Next up, Andrew and Lara. We have corporate earnings versus the strong U.S. dollar.
Yeah, so I can kick us off, and I'll focus primarily on the earnings side. Although I would argue that these two things are sort of intertwined. But I think on corporate earnings, And I think that was a good sort of segue from your discussion. I think it's tempting right now to say that equities specifically are you know, almost trading in a way that it looks like they're not even taking fundamentals into account. It seems like you watch markets day to day. It's really, it's currency, it's rates, it's Fed, it's all these sort of macro things. And fundamentals really seem to have taken a back seat. You know, if you look at, you know, the forward earnings expectations of analysts, right? The broad kind of consensus of what are earnings going to be over the next 12 months, that peaked last June and it's been coming down pretty consistently since then. But over that time, the S&P 500 is up over 6%. So I think there's this narrative in the market that, hey, it's Fed, it's macro right now, and that's really all that matters. We would sort of argue that maybe in the short term, that might continue to be true for a while. But in the medium term, it's really challenging to fight a difficult fundamental backdrop. And I think right now, we recently wrote a note that sort of looks at equity markets and says, hey, they're, you know, valued at 18 times earnings right now, which is very high historically. And sort of we see them in a bit of a pickle right now. On one side, you have margins, which have soared over the past couple of years due primarily to operating leverage, to the significant, you know, surge in revenue growth and to inflation. And as that all comes down, that operating leverage gets sucked out of the system, right? And you start to see significant margin pressure. Now, what's the one way that doesn't come to fruition? It's if the economy reaccelerates and nominal GDP growth stays hot. If that happens, that's exactly what the Fed does not want to see, and it's just going to, you know, continue to sort of look like what we've seen over the past few months, where markets have to push the terminal rate higher and higher. And eventually multiples, you know, start to come under pressure. And ultimately that I think does raise the risk of a recession, you know, maybe not in 3 months, but in, call it, 9 to 12 months. So I think corporate earnings, while it may feel like in the short term, they are sort of playing second fiddle to the macro stuff. I would argue in the medium term, that's really going to be sort of the lever that is driving markets.
It's hard for me to disagree with you there, Andrew, because in our matchup, strong dollar versus corporate earnings, I see the dollar over the coming year as being more of a follower than a leader for markets. You know, and this is really after an extraordinary 2022 for the dollar, which, you know, was up, you know, if you look in October of 2022, we were up 20% on the year, and we were at a 20-year high for the dollar index. So, you know, that came off. We ended the year up 8%, strong, but like the top of a multi-year range. We'd been there before. And I think, you know, to remind everybody, when we get a really strong dollar, it weighs on the earnings of these large multinational corporations. And it also, you know, I think this is tangential, but strong dollar acts on the economy in much the same way as tighter monetary policy does. So, you know, October of last year, Kara and I wrote the strong dollar playbook, you know, something that got a lot of attention. But I think when the dollar right now is strong-ish, but still within the range, it's not really going to be driving markets in and of itself. And, you know, could the dollar reemerge as an enormously powerful, strong force in 2023? I'm less worried about that because, you know, I think long-term interest rates are probably going to be a little bit more range-bound. I think U.S. growth right now, everyone's got pretty robust expectations for U.S. growth. I think if there's a risk, it's that we're a little bit too positive about you know, U.S. growth prospects. And then you still have, you know, non-U.S. events. The ECB looks like they're going to be a little more hawkish than we'd expected. Things that are going to keep non-U.S. rates a little bit high as well. So, you know, I think if you look at where we're going to get direction, market direction, I would say corporate earnings are going to beat the dollar for really driving markets in the coming year.
Yeah, it feels like the case for the dollar being a primary driver is sort of this idea of like the dollar being self-fulfilling, where it gets stronger, and that puts pressure on the global economy, which, you know, slows the economy down, which makes the dollar even stronger and sort of is sort of self-fulfilling cycle. It doesn't feel like we're necessarily close to that now.
No, I mean, China just reopened. You know, you have moments where I think people try to write a story for the dollar one way or the other. And I think after a year where the dollar really made a lot of headlines this year, it's probably not going to.
Yeah.
Right. That was a great matchup. So, but I think
I lost with that one, though.
But you're not taking sides.
Well, no.
We have corporate. Right. No one lost. Yeah. Well, the strong dollar lost.
Largest of the dollar.
Yeah, I love that character. I am. I'm a permanent dollar bull.
Everyone wins around here.
So,
I know you are. Yeah, I know you are. All right. Well, we have corporate earnings moving on.
Yeah.
Okay. It's actually, I'm going to toss it back to you guys this is actually the game that I am most excited, or the matchup that I am most excited to watch, or to hear, I guess. So we have tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy versus commercial real estate defaults. These are two things that have started tech layoffs have been in the news for a while now. It feels like I was just listening to the radio on the way in, and Meta is doing more layoffs. And, you know, we're hearing about this constantly. And it's easy if you just hear those headlines to have that cloud your view of the labor market, right? But remember, we just had that payrolls report in February of over 500,000 jobs added. So just a blockbuster report. And then we're also starting to see on the CRE default side, we're starting to see CRE defaults, especially at these higher rates. So, or CMBS defaults, I should say. But anyway, I'll let you guys take it away because I'm excited.
Yeah, I think both of these... you know, what is so interesting is both of these, tech layoffs spreading to broader economy and CRE defaults. We have come off of a terrible recession, the Great Recession, where CRE defaults did spread to the broader economy, you know, and residential housing as well. So I think I'm going to take the first side of this because I think this is something that I've spent a lot of time talking about because we need to remember two things. First of all, layoff announcements are upsetting, full stop, and they make everybody anxious. But remember that our labor force in the U.S. is 146 million people. So when we see layoffs of 5,000, 10,000, we need to put that in the broader context of just really, you know, at the most macro level across our entire economy. You know, there's very few signs that the labor market is weak. It has been so strong. If you take out a microscope, you can kind of see evidence that it's coming off of its most sort of frothy pace in decades. But really, you know, the unemployment rate's at 3.4%. This sort of weekly measure of who is being laid off is still below 200,000 every week. That is an extremely low number. And by the way, is one of my favorite indicators for watching this. So that's the first thing. This really does seem to still be focused on tech. And second of all is that we have to remember that there are companies that really overhired during the pandemic. And we see this in their stock prices. We see this in their investment spending, in their real estate holdings. They were extremely sort of aggressive about projecting forward the growth that they were seeing in 2000 and 2021 and acting upon that when they made some of these larger hiring and other investment decisions. So they're having to walk that back a little bit. And when we look at the layoff numbers, we really need to remember that they're laying off really a fraction of the workers that they hired during the pandemic. So. We need to watch employment conditions broadly. That is absolutely at the top of the list. A higher unemployment rate and broad job layoffs are a hallmark of recession, but tech layoffs in and of themselves are not a leading indicator of that. So I'm less concerned. To me, my side of this matchup is probably less likely to be the key driver in the coming year.
Yeah, and I just to add on to that, when you think about tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy, certainly that's ultimately other parts of the labor market as well. But it's also like to the extent that tech companies not only are laying off a bunch of workers, but they're also, you know, seriously cutting back on R&D and software spend and those types of things. We're not seeing that. You know, just recently we've seen sort of the ChatGPT craze, and you've seen NVIDIA's stock going crazy because of that. I don't think there's any thought within, you know, economists or, you know, the tech sector specifically that like tech spending is going to go through some sort of winter here that would spread throughout other parts of the economy. So I think we need to keep that in mind as well.
Good point.
So in terms of CRE defaults, I think this is a really interesting one that's getting a lot of noisy headlines, which we don't normally necessarily see in commercial real estate. It's usually sort of the...
And when we do, it makes everybody really nervous because PTSD still from
The last time you saw some, you know, conduit CMBS, you know, default on Bloomberg, it was, you know, it was not a good time. So, no. but I think it's important to put this into context, right? So we have seen a few larger office buildings sort of go into default recently, and they've made headlines because they've been large, you know, large loans, you know, that are taken out by significant and powerful sort of institutional investors who I'm not going to name here. But they sort of have gotten, you know, headlines, and I think it has a lot of people asking, are we going to see a wave of defaults? Is this sort of the tip of the iceberg? And I think it's, you know, I think it's important to remember that there's been pressure in different parts of the commercial real estate market for years now, right? Like you think about the retail space and malls, there's been a lot of pressure on regional malls for years now, right? And that's a significant part of the commercial real estate market. But what we saw was not every default ends in liquidation, in lots of losses for investors, et cetera. What you get is you get some really poorly located, you know, older types of assets that, yeah, have to go through a liquidation process and investors lose a lot of money. A lot of these assets, though, you know, the borrower brings the lender to the table and they renegotiate, they extend the loan, they put modifications in. I think you're going to see a lot of that in the office space coming up because, yes, the fundamentals are not great in some parts of that sector right now, you know, full stop. We can't avoid that, I think. But I also think that there are still people who believe in the space. There are still people, you know, if you look at the fundamentals, actually, we are at the top end of where we've been in terms of office usage over the past 3 years right now, right? And there's still plenty of investors out there who think, hey, I can get a really good deal on a well-located, well-amenitized office building. So I think, you know, it's important to be rational about this. I don't think this is going to go away, but I also don't think that this is something here and now that we need to worry about from a systemic standpoint.
Have borrowers and lenders gotten better about that negotiating process? Was that a lesson learned from from the financial crisis?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I think there's just more lenders out there. There's more players with capital, right? Like during the GFC, you sort of had this situation where if banks pulled back and if CMBS pulled back, there was basically nobody else out there, right? Right now, I think there's alternative lenders, there's insurance companies, there's debt funds who are willing to put capital to work.
Cool.
Which can be positive and negative, right?
Yeah.
Your institutional lenders at times may play much harder ball than your traditional banks might have through the financial crisis. But your point about is it systemic or not, I think is the key point. Like when you think about the financial crisis, you just saw wave after wave, subprime blows up and all of a sudden it's hitting sieves, which nobody knew about. And then the auction rate market seizes up. And I'm not sure if you have that or anywhere near that.
I think
level
there's more circuit breakers in the financial system.
Right? Yeah. So who wins our showdown then?
I'm gonna
walk that back and say that I think tech layoffs spread to broader economy in this particular situation is probably going to be something that we need to be a little bit more concerned about in the coming year than I think it wins the overall tournament, but I do think that it you know, wins this matchup.
I agree.
And I also think one point, you know, if we're going to get really literal and talk about what is going to drive markets the most, I mean, we're all watching those payrolls data so closely, and we are seeing markets move on that. So
talk about daily volatility.
We'll take it very literally.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. all right. This is going to be an interesting one for Rob and I. So we have Fed rate cuts versus a balloon related incident. This one.
You have a birthday coming up or something?
We're not talking about the balloon arc that you put together for the Eagles, right?
I did put together. And I will say my work product probably suffered then. but it was a labor of love.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll put a picture of that on social. But anyways, so this is a tough one, right? Because I think that I actually think I have to take balloon-related incident here because I don't see Fed rate cuts. I don't think any of us expect any Fed rate cuts in the near term. I think if we look at what the market's currently pricing in, we've continued to push out Fed rate cuts over the course of this year. Now I think we're pricing in the first, markets are pricing in the first cut towards the end of this year. I think our, and you know, Laura, please jump in, but our RFS house view is that we're not going to get these Fed rate cuts this year. But I do think if we want to say the lack of Fed rate cuts, you know, I think that could be something that moves markets. I think we are seeing, at any time we see some sort of repricing of the terminal rate, of the Fed's path, we are seeing that drive a lot of volatility. So I could take that end of the coin. But Rob, what are you thinking here?
I mean, 99 Luftballons is one of my favorite songs of all time. So that being
Jet
said,
in the house.
I don't even know what that
Andrew
song
Carapaw
is.
Andrew don't even know what that song
right
is.
Over so. My head.
I love German techno. Yeah. I don't know what's
I do think the second point you were making on Fed rate cuts, while certainly it is hard to see the Fed cutting this year, I think one of the most interesting things to just been watching, you know, since June of last year is how the Fed rate curve has shifted from pricing in 3 rate cuts this year to now, well, pricing in less than 1, pricing in just sort of pushing that into say, okay, well, we'll just have 6 rate cuts next year, and how that has started to change. And so from that standpoint, I think the expectation of when Fed rate cuts will happen and how severe they will be has had a very big impact that has reverberated, you know, throughout financial markets, you know, perhaps even more so than just, not that we want to jump ahead to Fed rate hikes, but maybe more than the simple action of the Fed increasing is how the expectation of when they would cut and how steeply they will cut when they have to start doing it, it's had a very big impact on markets. So if you put that angle on it, maybe Fed rate cuts.
We'll add the word expectations to the end.
Yeah.
Or selection committee.
Yeah. Or even reframing it as like Fed reaction function, I think is to Rob's point, is really critical because I think markets are used to the Fed at the first sign of trouble, just like zero interest rates, quantitative easing. And I think it's a very different.
Are teams
reaction.
Allowed to change their names in the middle of the tournament?
Oh,
I'm not
maybe
sure
not.
That's
yeah.
how that works.
Okay.
Well, I make the rules around here.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go with some sort of discussion of Fed rate cuts.
Okay.
Moving on. I just don't think we can have balloon related incident.
It can't happen.
Again.
There's a whole song about it. I'm telling you, it's a great song.
That's our new intro music. All right. Let's move on to the next matchup. We have Fed rate hikes versus consumer delinquencies. So Andrew and Rob, I'm going to have you guys walk us through this.
Well, maybe I'll just continue the thought. I mean, Fed rate hikes, we've certainly seen the change in sentiment. Were they going to do 75? Were they going to do 50? Now are we settling on 25? You know, that change in sentiment did have some pretty big implications for the market and the Fed seemingly taking a little bit of pressure off the brake pedal, although the foot is still on the brake pedal, you know, did cause an acceleration in markets. We saw a really nice run in January, you know, some of that perhaps related to this and change and how aggressive the Fed was going to be. So from that standpoint, I think, you know, look, the if we can say Fed rate cut expectations, you know, how long are they going to continue to hike and, you know, how much pressure are they going to need to apply, I think is a major event that will continue to move markets. You know, consumer delinquencies, Andrew, you've seen them start to tick up in certain places, but I'm not sure it's reached a level of market moving and defeating rate hikes in our
yeah.
bracket.
I think these two things are pretty closely related, actually. When you think about
starting to see the method to my madness,
yeah,
pun intended.
Ye So, I mean, like when you think about consumer delinquencies, not that that's what the Fed is targeting, certainly. But I think within that, you've seen the lack of interest rate sensitivity in the economy and the difficulty that the Fed is sort of having in slowing down the economy. And part of that is because what you had over the past decade was consumers and also corporations taking advantage of extremely low long-term rates and financing themselves long-term at these low rates, right? So when you think about consumer debt, the vast majority of that is mortgage debt, right? And almost all of that is sort of financed at the 30-year long-term fixed rate.
2-5% of the mortgage market has any sort of incentive to refinance right now.
Yeah.
It's some absurdly low number.
It's
like that.
Yeah, it's essentially zero. I don't think if I had a home, I would look to refinance right now. So certainly, when you think about it that way, that's going to, you know, really dry up housing activity, which it has. But in terms of the existing homeowners and delinquencies, they're good. They're like, I'm not going anywhere. If rates drop at some point, maybe. But you know, as for now, the affordability on those existing homeowners is great. When you think about other parts of sort of the consumer balance sheet, certainly autos and credit cards are something that have gotten a bit more press recently. When you think about autos, not only have auto loan rates gone up, obviously, as the Fed has hiked, but also you've seen car prices are, you know, almost double for used cars, at least what they were pre-COVID. So people, to the extent people are stretching themselves financially to afford a monthly payment on, call it a, you know, a new car that was $40,000 a couple years ago, now it's $70,000. We need to watch that. The same with credit card delinquencies. You know, credit card lending has gone up recently. You know, delinquencies have started to tick up. They're you know, barely back to where they were pre-COVID. But I think this, the auto space and the credit card space are certainly places we need to watch, especially as consumers continue to sort of run down their excess savings from the pandemic period. But you know, in terms of who wins this, I think it has to be Fed hikes. I think the market has continuously thought that they've had the Fed pinned in terms of like a range that will be the terminal rate. And I think we've all seen the charts about, you know, the futures market is famously bad at predicting what the Fed is going to do. So if inflation stays, you know, persistent as it's shown over the past couple months, who knows? We may get another hawkish surprise.
All right. Fed rate hikes, moving on. Okay. Laura, we got a good one. U.S. debt ceiling versus a geopolitical event. Start this off.
Well, you know, you were the one who suggested that we do a podcast with Jason Cole, our political analyst here at FS Investments, who just started. And I think he has been a tremendous resource about the debt ceiling. And I have to say, I feel like I was not complacent going into that podcast and left the discussion with him feeling even more anxious about the possibility that the debt ceiling is going to have significant market impact over the coming year. And that's not to downplay what are really significant geopolitical uncertainties. And, you know, we're coming off of a year where Russia's invasion of the Ukraine was an absolute, I think, you know, completely rocked the boat and ricocheted around markets. And we're still feeling that impact. But I think the debt ceiling, and here I'll, you know, repeat Jason's concern, which I really echo, which is that there is a non-zero probability that we accidentally default, that we are going to raise the debt ceiling. That will happen. But do we experience a technical default before that? And I think maybe, because I'm not an expert in this realm, I don't want to place probability on anything. But I think more importantly, just to say that when I see other pundits and I hear people say, oh, it's going to shake out like it did in 2011 when, you know, we kind of came down to the wire, but we raised the debt ceiling in time. I cringe. Because that was bad.
Well, I mean,
that was not a good market outcome.
Yeah, no, it's... if we think about what happened then, and yeah, it was, you know, 12 years ago at this point, we saw consumer confidence really fall. But, yeah. You know,
equity markets hammered.
Fell 17% in the course of like 2 weeks.
It took them four months to recover where they'd been.
Credit spreads widened. We saw the economic uncertainty index reach its highest recorded level. It has since surpassed that in COVID. But I mean, it was a very, very uncertain time. It was not a good time for markets.
No,
by any
means. And I think, you know, a lot of people say to me, oh, well, we were experiencing the European debt crisis back then. That was another reason markets were so volatile. Well, at the time, interest rates were at zero and the Fed was, you know, had just finished sort of the first round of quantitative easing and would go on to do two more. Now, the Fed is coming off of the most aggressive rate hike cycle in 40 years and is quantitative tightening. So, you know, there's never a good time for a debt crisis. And so I think that when we look at the spectrum of outcomes, you know, the kind of the more optimistic being, oh, it's going to be like 2011, like that to me is a concern. So I really, it moved over the last, since we recorded that podcast, it moved up in my rankings of what could impact the coming year. And I have to say, I am the opposite of complacent. Yeah. I'm pretty nervous about it.
And just a plug for that podcast, it's on this feed. It's still completely relevant. Yeah, everything. 100%. And Jason is a fantastic resource. Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think the only thing on the geopolitical side, last year, obviously, geopolitically dominated really by the Russia-Ukraine situation. It's, I guess, Taiwan is a potential here. You know, things like that. To me, this is more of like, this is your left tail event. We've seen a lot of those in the last couple of years. So,
it's hard to dismiss that as well.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It's kind of like, this is like your unknown.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think debt ceiling is moving on here. All righty. Next up, we have China policy versus just Elon Musk as a person.
Doing something.
Doing anything.
Yeah,
I mean, look, if this was a auto industry March Madness bracket, I think the chance of Elon Musk moving, you know, deep into the finals could be pretty high because you continue to see a lot of reverberations in what's gone on there. You know, the changing of prices of electric vehicles has been really interesting to watch. I think it's brought a lot of competitiveness, you know, back to Tesla, for instance, but I think in the purpose of a March Madness or Market Madness bracket, you know, that type of move isn't really a high-level market-moving type action. And so then it's, does he do something else that's super crazy? You know, probably not.
I will, playing devil's advocate, he is simultaneously the head of the most important social media company in the world, the head of the by far the most traded stock in the world, and the head of the company that is providing broadband to Ukraine in their war efforts. So there's a lot that can go on there. Sure. But I will say on China policy, we just got their recent annual party meeting that they had. They set a conservative growth target of 5%, which I think some people expected a bit higher. I think when we think about China right now, you know, they ended their COVID lockdowns. That's acting as a huge stimulus, but I think it's not the type of stimulus that we're used to from China. We're used to this huge, you know, debt-driven surge in investment and real estate spending. This is much more on the consumer side, which I think is a, you know, sort of, it's not going to drive the levels of growth we saw, say, 5-10 years ago from China. The good news is that it also likely won't drive the type of, you know, commodity-centric inflation that is, you know, hurting us, but really hurting Europe right now. So I think those are the things sort of to watch. How strong does the economy get? How much, because Europe is so tied to China from a trade standpoint, how much does China reopening support Europe? And then certainly there's certain things they can do, again, with debt limits, with their interest rate, which they're currently leaving flat, basically. So, China policy, I think, is actually a bit of a weak number one here, but I think it does move on.
All right, our last first round matchup. So we have long-term interest rates versus crypto. You want to start with this one, Laura?
I don't know. I feel like I'm going to take crypto. Okay. I'm not going to take crypto to advance.
Oh,
but I think, you know, when I'm out there speaking to clients and talking about sort of what keeps me up at night or what I'm concerned about, this, you know, I think at the end of the day, when we have a Fed rate hike cycle like this, any Fed rate hike cycle, but this has been so fast, so aggressive, it's the tide going out. And I get nervous about, you know, like, is there some Ponzi scheme out there or some financial episode that's going to break and it's going to cause sort of broader systemic damage? And when cryptos kind of, you know, we had, you know, the dominoes start falling in the crypto space last year, that made me anxious. Like, is this going to be the, is this the tide going out? A bunch of people are swimming naked with their Daytonas and their, you know, like fancy cars. And we're going to now have to, you know, deal with sort of some broader systemic fallout. And happily, that has not happened. Yeah. So I think all that's to say, and I should probably started that off very clumsily, Kara, because I don't think that's going to be the driving. I don't think crypto is going to be the driving factor. But when I saw crypto on this, that was the talking point that jumped out to me.
I mean, I think that a lot of the, you know, if we think about like the NFTs and like Dogecoin, all of these crypto, you know, elements of crypto, I think they were a lot really like a symptom of all of that excess, all that excess liquidity, all of that that we had for so many years. And I also think we saw, you know, once we saw FTX collapse and that did not become a systemic event, it really didn't spread to markets. It's really crypto following markets rather than driving markets is what we've seen. I mean, that's just the relationship that we've seen unfold. It trades like a risk asset right now, Bitcoin at least, I should say. So I agree with you. I don't think crypto is moving on here. When we think about long-term rates, though, you know, I think this year becomes not necessarily those acute rate increases or those acute rising rates, but it's really the fallout from a steady, you know, a higher long-term rate environment, higher for longer.
You know, you look at the last 2 years, you know, it's incredible. We started 2021, the 10-year was less than 1%. And if we started last year with the 10-year at 151, and today it's 4%. It peaked at 4.25%, you know, end of last year, sort of October of last year. But I think, you know, it's come so far. We have felt that in financial markets, on consumer budgets and balance sheets, in corporate balance sheets. It's happened everywhere. I think from here, we kind of maintain that 350 to 4% range throughout the year. But I think really it's, again, sort of following the broader employment trends, inflation expectations, and Fed rate hikes. You know, it's probably not going to win the tournament, but I think it advances.
It'll move on. Yeah. All right. Okay. So that wraps up the first round. I think that we did a good job of really, you know, setting the stage for all these teams. So I want to kind of quickly go through the next rounds and our matchups. And if there's anything specific that we want to call out, please do that, you know, changes if you're looking at a certain matchup. But so Elite Eight round. I've been here before, I promise. Elite Eight round. We have inflation versus corporate earnings. Andrew, give us, you know, who are you have coming out of here? We talked about it being macro-driven environment for the beginning, the next little bit, and then turning in fundamentals. So who wins this one in your view?
I feel like this is for the next few months what's driving markets. A month or two ago, I might have said earnings. I think now that, especially after the last CPI report and after the sort of revisions that we got that show inflation didn't come down as much as we thought last year, I have to go inflation because at some point, if it doesn't come down, the Fed's going to have to really put the kibosh down and then earnings, you know, kind of follow from that.
Well, okay.
Can I take the next one?
Oh, sure. So next up we have tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy versus Fed rate cuts.
I am here, but definitely going to take the tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy because, you know, as I said in the first round discussion, layoffs, broad macro layoffs, multiple months in a row of declines in payroll employment, that is the hallmark of recession. That is when the referee really starts the clock on a new recession. So I think that is not something that I expect, but it is something that is absolutely the top of my watch list for the coming year.
All right.
Gonna be watching it.
Tech layoffs are moving on. All right, Fed. The next region, Fed rate hikes versus the debt ceiling.
Oof. I mean, that's a
This could be a
mean, if
at least a Final Four.
If debt ceiling becomes a real issue and the government doesn't address it and we default, even if only for a day, I mean, it's a calamity. Whereas, you know, but like Fed rate hikes is a more real, tangible. The Fed is hiking. If they hike more than expected, markets will react to that.
Well, and these aren't independent, right? I mean, right now the Fed is expected to kind of, right now the peak Fed funds, the terminal is sort of like June, July, and the X date on the debt ceiling is like, we don't know, but maybe July, August. Like, does the Fed stop their rate hike cycle because this is, you know, I don't know.
All right.
Oh.
So we gotta pick one. It's a coin flip.
I say Fed rate hikes. That's, but sorry, wasn't my bracket. Wasn't my part of that.
No.
Wasn't my conference.
I mean, I think we all want to be eternal optimists that the government's going to find a way to solve the debt ceiling and it doesn't become a big issue. And if that's the case, absolutely Fed rate hikes over debt ceiling.
All right. Let's go with Fed rate hikes.
All right. That's tough.
Andrew, how about China policy versus long-term rates?
That's tough. I feel like China policy, people have a decent grasp on at least what they're doing right now. Now, any change would be massive, but I don't think people are expecting any huge change, especially after their meeting last week. I'm going to say long-term rates just because I think old paradigms kind of die hard, and we're seeing that with this incredible curve inversion right now. And I think as we go throughout this year, more and more people are going to realize that rates are not going to go back down to 1.5%, 2%. And I mean, you look at, like, again, where equities are valued right now at 18 times earnings. That's just a historical anomaly with the 10-year around 4%. So I think markets continue to kind of get used to a new world.
Yeah. All right. Long-term rates moving on. All right. Our final four. We have inflation, tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy, Fed rate hikes, and long-term interest rates. This doesn't feel that surprising to me. So anyway, Laura, inflation versus the layoffs.
My answer may surprise you guys. I'm going to go tech layoffs spreading to broader economy moving on, because I think wages are an important piece of the inflation picture that are now underappreciated and are driving Fed policy more. So I think that's going to become a more dominant part of the I think that's a more dominant uncertainty of the economic landscape over the coming year.
Like, you think about the, like, what in real time is going to, like, really impact markets if we got an upside surprise finally in, like, initial, like, jobless claims. That would set off the alarm bells big time.
Totally. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
All right. Fed rate hikes versus long-term rates. How did this happen?
Short-term rates or long-term rates? Take a pick.
Yield curve flattening or steepening?
Let's take this one.
Oh, man.
I mean,
Fed. Yeah, I think that the possibility of a hawkish surprise would move markets more than, like, the 10-year rising 25 basis points.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think about, like, magnitude now, right?
The argument again for long term rates is that markets still have not calibrated for a world where the 10-year is consistently at
between
3.5 and 4.5.
It's not the move in long term now; it's them staying high.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And also,
like you think about economically, like, the second the 10-year comes down, mortgage rates come down, and the housing market explodes again. Okay. You know, it's like, that's really the lever that can drive economic. And that's, you know, that's what most corporate borrowing rates are based off of. I would go long-term rates.
All right.
Personally.
I'm fine with it.
I mean, what is the propensity that in a no landing scenario and the economy stays strong that long-term rates go higher? I mean, 10-year, we hit 4.25 on a Fed rate curve that was lower than it is today. I mean, could you not go back to
5%.
4.25, 4.5, 5 all of a sudden, and then you've got a whole host of duration pain all across fixed income and other things like that.
But I mean, I guess either way, we see the 10-year move or long-term rates move.
Yeah, that would be my choice personally. But
wow.
Laura, were you going to say
I was going to say Fed, but, you know, this is, I guess, where, you know, we all have our different.
I was with you
tournament, yeah.
Sure.
Over the coming,
I think Andrew convinced me though.
I think what you're driving at is really important, because over the longer term. If we weren't talking about the next year, I would agree. You know, we've had 40 years of long-term interest rates trending lower. And I think where if you consider that the next 5 years, we could actually see the chance of hitting 3%, the same as hitting 5% in this world where the risks are more symmetric, that is truly, I mean, long-term interest rates haven't been here in 16 years. It's a different world. But I think over the coming year, shifts in Fed rate hike expectations are just...
That's fair.
Yep.
You know, huge driver markets.
Yeah. I can buy that.
Yeah.
What do you do, Kara? I don't know.
I mean, you're the chief economist.
I think you have final say on that. We're going Fed. Going Fed. All right. It all comes down to this. It is a national championship. We have Fed rate hikes versus tech layoffs spreading to the broader economy. We all knew it had to come down to this.
Did we?
Yeah. The Fed is just,
The Fed was going to be there. Yeah.
The Fed was going to be there. And we're all watching the labor market for signs that the Fed can slow down, for signs of a recession. I mean, I think it was coming down to this.
I think jobs. I mean, I think jobs, I'm gonna misstate this, but what wags the tail, like jobs is driving it. If the jobs number gets worse, that's going to have a direct impact on what the Fed does. It's not, well, I guess some people would say maybe the Fed can mess up, which could then impact the jobs market. But I think as the jobs number goes, has a more immediate impact, and the market's going to change quickly if that jobless rate starts going up
and I agree with you. And maybe I'll rephrase the one part and say, like, the Fed rate hike cycle is already very far along, and those shifting expectations of where we end the Fed rate hike cycle and when we end the Fed rate hike cycle are going to be massive drivers of the coming year. I think those two things are dependent on the jobs market. And so that to me is why I took at the end of the day, the final core single thing that is going to dominate the landscape, it's going to be jobs.
All right. Heard it here first, folks. All right. I think that was fun. Thanks, guys.
It's going to be an interesting year.
It will be an interesting
year. Thanks, Kara. Yeah. When you make us think about it like this, it is really fun.
We'll check in. We said we would do it last year, but we need to actually do it 3 months from now. We'll check back in on our bracket. But thanks for the time, everyone.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks, Kara.
This episode was recorded at the FS Investments headquarters in Philadelphia's historic Navy Yard. It was edited and engineered by Aaron Sherman. Special thanks to show coordinator Ellie Zhang. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.